Thomas Jefferson believed that a self-governing nation could be built on the foundation of small, self-sufficient farms. And it was. But then so many of the nation's farmers signed up to serve others. And that leads us to ask, can farmers be freed from their servitude?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1287th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paphos who are tuned in to the podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, today I would like to begin with Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Seems simple enough, right? Not enough food, no sandcastles. Simple as that. Now, Thomas Jefferson's idea was to build a nation on a foundation of small, independent farms. The reason Jefferson held up the small farm was not so much because of its economies, but rather its morality. Looking across the pond to Europe, Jefferson could plainly see that manufacturing, with its attendant commerce, disrupted the relationships of people and then engendered greed and corruption, and forced many, if not most, into dependence and servitude. In other words, Jefferson saw Europe being built on the foundation of shifting sand. On this side of the pond, with an entire continent of land waiting to be tilled, Jefferson believed that a strong agrarian society could be built on the moral foundation of small independent farms. Listen to how Jefferson described his farmers. Those who labor in the earth are the chosen people of God, endowed by the Creator with substantial and genuine virtue. It is they who keep alive the sacred fire. And again, corruption of morals in the mass of cultivators is a phenomenon of which no age or nation has furnished an example. In contemporary terms, Jefferson believed a new America could be built on an internet of small farms operated by people who are self-sufficient, independent, and God-fearing. Jefferson's agrarian internet worked like a charm until most Americans moved into town to work in factories and offices. Those who remained on the land then had to farm with money instead of people, and farming became manufacturing. The manufacturing model of farming has many economic advantages, but few of those advantages seem to go to the farmer. Farmers now grow commodities they sell for pennies per pound to manufacturers, who then sell them for dollars per pound to consumers. To participate in this manufacturing model of agriculture, many farmers signed contracts that, in effect, made them serfs on their own land. Looking at this model of agriculture, it's easy to see what Jefferson saw when he looked across the pond to the economies of industrial Europe. Disrupted relationships between farmers and consumers, greed, corruption, and consolidation, and dependence and servitude. Seeing in all of this a foundation of sinking, shifting sand, we pause to ask, can farmers be freed from their servitude? And who better to ask than sixth-generation farmer Corwin Heatwohl, who is the founder and CEO of Farmer Focus. Corwin, did you see anything in my positioning there that rang untrue to you?
Well, yeah. No, Michael, I did not see anything that that we would not agree with.
And so here we are looking at this very interesting situation. We are a nation built on the foundation of small, independent farms, but now they're all gone. Or are they?
The small farms have definitely felt the pressures of what you described from referencing what Jefferson was alluding to, and it's definitely scaled into what we refer to as a vertically integrated model, or the big companies that are vertically integrated, we refer to as the integrators. And it's a model where the integrator owns the entire supply chain, basically formed off of the demand for massive amounts of cheaper food. And so in that process where the integrator owns the whole process, the hatchery and the feed mill, including the animals on the farmer's farm, as the call to produce that large amount of food, that is where the farmers, as you alluded to, have become serfs on their own farms.
So today we're going to find a way around that, hopefully, with your help. And but before we do, I'd like to tell us a little bit about where you're at, because you're at in one of my favorite places in the world, which is the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia. Tell us a little bit about the Shenandoah.
Well, we are very biased to the Shenandoah Valley here, located where we're located in Harrisonburg, Virginia, because my family has farmed in the Shenandoah Valley for six generations. And it's interesting that all four of my siblings are owner-operator farmers. So farming is very personal to us. So as we saw the challenges that farmers face over the consolidation and with the vertically integrated models, that's where we knew something had to be done. So we started Farmer Focus, which is in complete contrast to the vertically integrated model as answering the challenges.
Good. Yeah. And what is it that makes the Shenandoah River Valley so special for farming? Is it the climate? Is it the proximity to the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area with all of those hungry people there?
Well, that's a great question, because it's really a mix of a lot of things, including our location and proximity to populations. It is beautiful, fertile farmland, which is very conducive to successful farming. We have four very distinct seasons that really play into the success of farming. And there's a lot of resources close by. There's a lot of hatcheries, feed mills, and companies that really support and embrace the culture of farming.
And so all of that goes to get into making for one very beautiful farm valley. I had the opportunity to spend some time in the Shenandoah River Valley with Joel Salatin down the road from you at in Swope, Virginia, and fell in love with the place by virtue of that experience on Joel's farm. And I suspect that yours is not altogether that much different than Joel's. But it's a beautiful valley, and it's a lot of beautiful people doing God's work, as Thomas Jefferson would say. So, yeah, it's a wonderful place. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about your farming operation before we go into Farmer Focus. And we note that in 2020, you changed the name from the Shenandoah Valley Organic to Farmer Focus. So we suspect in that name change, there was a whole change in business as well. But before we go there, tell us a little bit about the business before you made the change and what you did. You're a chicken farmer, right?
Yep, I am very proud to be a chicken farmer myself, and very honored that my 16-year-old daughter has interest in the farm and pretty much runs the whole farm now. So, you know, as a farmer myself, I've previously produced for an integrator, and we sought to break free from that system. And we found organic farming as a way to, as an avenue to break from that system. And once we had, we're farming for ourselves and selling our own birds, not partnered with an integrator, at that time, I didn't realize how important of a move that was, because I had broken free and I was in control of my own farm, its profitability, sustainability, in control of the animal welfare, and that was monumental. Then as we grew, we needed to partner with more farmers, so we had the great opportunity to create a model in collaboration with the farmers that empowered them and allowed them ownership in the process, which self-incentivized animal husbandry and great things. And through that process of building that company up, we started to realize that we really have a farmer-focused business model, and that our brand needs to better represent what we do and what we do great and align with our mission, which is to promote and protect generational family farms. So that's why we made the transition to farmer focus.
Mm-hmm. Now, being in close proximity to the Washington, D.C. Metroplex, like I said earlier, there's a lot of hungry people over there. And when I was at Polyface Farm with Joel, when I first arrived on the farm, there was a whole line of people standing there waiting to waiting at the barn. It was a line of people, like waiting to get in a rock concert or something. And so I got in line, you know, having been in the Navy, that's what you do. You get in line. If you see a line, get in it. So I got in line and turned to the lady in front of me and I said, "Ma'am, excuse me, but why are we standing in line?" And she says, "Well, to get chickens, of course." And I said, "Where are you from?" And I said, she said, "Well, I'm from Washington, D.C." And I said, "You drove 3 hours to buy a chicken?" And she said, "No, I drove 3 hours to buy a Salatin chicken." And so when I hear you doing pretty much the same thing, you get a notion when you started doing organic chicken that the market was really hungry for that real food, right?
Yes, we've been very blessed to feel the same demand that you're referencing from Salatin's farm. And the consumer is really waking up to the need to know where their food came from. And was the farmer treated fairly in the process? Did the animal live a natural life? And also, very importantly, was the climate, was our environment respected through the process? So we have, as we've had great opportunities to tell the story and tell our consumers how we're different, we've been seeing an increased demand for our products.
There you go. Well, and that's certainly where we want to take our program today. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are in the Shenandoah River Valley at the Farmer Focus Farm, which used to be called the Shenandoah Valley Organic Farm, but the name was changed to reflect a whole new kind of mission. Not only are the farmers and the family that runs the farm in the business of providing good quality protein to the consuming public, but they're providing a very interesting service to other farmers. And that service is to help them break free of the servitude of the industrial model of raising chickens. We're freeing the slaves, as it were, with our good friend, Corwin Heatwall of the Shenandoah River Valley. Stay tuned as we free some slaves. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here. Today we're helping farmers break free of the servitude they have found themselves in by raising chickens with the industrial way of manufacturing chickens that has really, you know, taken over the nation. Corwin, we note with interest that the Chesapeake Bay area is a very big poultry raising area, correct?
Yes, it is the poultry capital here on the central east coast.
Okay. Raise a lot of chickens and a lot of turkeys, and so it's a very big thing there. Now, you were kind of going along with that industrial model. So would you tell us what it was like to be a farmer in contract to an integrator, as you call them?
Yeah. Well, the integrator, when they own everything on your farm, they need to control everything on your farm. So essentially, you were given a playbook of which you were told how to run your farm, when to turn the lights on, when to turn the lights off, when what lights to run, what kind of lights to put in the sockets.
Now was this your farm? Was this your land that you owned?
Yeah, so the farmer owns the land and the buildings, and then the company owns the birds in the barns, the feed that's in the inventory in the tanks, they own everything else.
Okay. So in the integrator or in the corporation that owns the chickens, you don't own the chickens? How do you get your chickens?
The chickens come from the integrator's owned hatchery. And they own the breeder birds out in the field. They own the breeder birds. They own the trucks that haul the eggs to the hatchery. They own the hatchery. So they're in complete control of the process. And the challenge with that model is they're so cost focused on every aspect. So even the vaccinations and vitamin and mineral programs that the breeders get that is so important to having a quality chick. They're everything's examined and it's squeezed. And that's where farmers lose control of quality.
So the integrator owns everything, including the way the farm is managed. They're in total control of everything. So doesn't that make your life easy as a farmer?
No, it's good to have educational support and best practices, but you know, farming needs to be handled differently in different regions. And each farm is a little different. So there's no one playbook that really works for all farms. And, you know, farmers are really smart people. They're very intuitive and they can be incredibly creative when they're empowered to have that freedom to make their own decisions and farm the way that they believe is best for specifically their farm and their animals.
Now, this industrial model is not just for chickens. It's for a lot of different commodities, correct?
Yes, it is across a lot of commodities, but especially used in animal production, and that can cover other protein categories as well.
We note that there is out here on the coast, some berry companies that also employ that model. They provide the berries and the farmers, you know, grow them out and the company then, markets them throughout the country and the world, as a matter of fact. So it seems to work pretty good for them. Why weren't you satisfied with that?
Well, over the years, as the integrators got larger and the consolidation tightened to where now only there's three poultry companies that control over 50% of the 8 billion chickens produced and consumed in this country each year. So the farmers are losing choice and do not have that flexibility. And that's where customer service lowers. And over the years, as we've experienced inflation around construction costs, land costs, and inputs, the need to pay the farmers hasn't increased at the same level. So the farmer's profitability has squeezed and squeezed to the point where I knew my own farm was not a generational farm. I could not in good conscience pass my own farm along to my children and expect them to bear the burden. So a big part of the reason we created the farmer-focused model was to create a financially viable system.
So when somebody else owns everything and controls everything, including both ends of the food chain, of the chicken food chain, which is to say the chicks and the eggs, and all the way through the process, but most importantly, controls access to the market, the farmer in the middle is really an indentured servant. Am I wrong?
No, that's correct, and that's where the farmer's profitability has felt the squeeze very strongly. And we, on average, compared to industry statistics, report that our farmers make 36% higher profitability on their farm. And another thing that this model has done to farmers, it has made them feel like a number, like a behind-the-scenes kind of producer, when really they need to be the star of the show. And that's why that on all of our products, you will see the Meet Your Farmer Farm ID system, to where you can take that four-letter code and go to our website and meet the family that worked hard to produce that wonderful meal for you. So we're working to bring back what has trended as the food system has trended faceless. We're working to bring a face back to food, so that people know exactly where their food comes from and how it was raised.
So the consumer then, instead of just buying food from an anonymous corporation that could have been made anywhere by anybody, it is, you're allowing the consumer to buy food with its farmer's face on it. And in doing so, you're also allowing the farmer then to connect with those people who are buying his or her food, right? Food with his farmer's face on it.
Yeah, that's, it is, consumers have really expressed over the last 5 to 10 years that they want to know where their food came from. And the more transparency that we can give in the process, the more comfortable they become that the entire process was managed very responsibly.
Now, I've often been given the opportunity to speak to high school kids, and with respect to agriculture and food and the sources of their food. So one of the educational tricks I like to play is to bring in two eggs, one from a local farmer's market and one from an industrial egg producer. And I will hold these two eggs up in front of the class, and I'll say, can you tell me the difference between these two eggs? And the class looks at the eggs, and well, of course not. They're two white eggs. What difference could there possibly be? So I describe the two fundamental models of producing eggs, one of which would be what you're doing, and the other would be what the vertically integrators would be doing, and describe to them how the farmer is more likely to give too much food to the chickens to keep them healthy, whereas the integrator has, you know, chemists there measuring things down to the tenth of a cent. And so what do you think that, what impact, I asked the class, do you think that will have on these eggs? And so I have two saucers, and we crack the eggs, and we have the kids look at them. And it's as obvious as the nose on your face that one of the eggs was grown by somebody who cared, and the other was not. The yolk lays flat. It's dull yellow, and it's watery, whereas the farmer's market egg stands up proud and golden and firm, and you know, and the kids can feel the thickness of the eggshell, and you know, just in that one little demonstration, you know, it really has a way of getting through what is happening to our food chain with respect to this vertical integration. How do you go out in the world and sell your chickens? What do you do?
Yes, well, that is a great analogy when, what importantly to our model is how we partner with our 73 farmer relationships, and we work together to hold the hatchery and the feed mill accountable to the specs that you're referring to there, mm-hmm. the right nutritional balances, price, availability, quantity, all of those things, so that we can have that same, not just consistency, but that same quality of product.
And are you building the farmer focus brand?
Yeah, that is what we are working to do for our farmers, is tell the story and build the brand as consumers taste the product and love what we do and how we're empowering our farmers and the quality that is resulting from our system being different. The brand has experienced some great momentum. You can now find a farmer-focused brand in like Publix, Harris Teeter, Fresh Markets, and beyond. And that is allowing us to partner with more and more farmers.
Okay. And in partnering with more and more farmers, you can do more and more to build the brand and become a more significant market player. Some time ago, I got a call from a fellow in the Deep South. Michael, he said, Michael, I grow the best watermelons in the world. Everybody says so. But Michael, I'm not making any money with these watermelons. I said, well, how are you selling them? He said, well, the guy comes by with a truck every couple of weeks and we throw the melons up there with the rest of the melons in the countryside here. And that's how I sell them. And I said, well, if that's the way you're selling watermelons, why try to be the best watermelon grower when you could reduce your cost? Because it's once you put your watermelon up on that truck with everybody else, you're a commodity, right? You're just another watermelon. But if you can find some way to distinguish yourself and then hold yourself true to that way you're portraying yourself, then you can step up into the world to a greater price and whatnot. And that seems to be what you're doing, right?
Yes, that is exactly what we're doing with the farmer-focused brand. And we're the only 100% organic and certified humane chicken producer that has a mission to promote and protect generational family farms. That shows in our labeling, that shows in the claims that we have, and the logo has a silhouetted father and daughter walking out to their farm. Actually, that picture was one of our farmers. So our brand represents what we're doing and helps really distinguish the large differences that are between us and the other producers.
And incidentally, if people want to see that image, you can find it at Farmer Focus website. So you just Google Farmer Focus and you'll get there. But it is a very good image. Typically, you know, the image of a farmer is somebody outstanding in a field with a handful of soil or a plant or something like that. But having the image of a farmer and the farmer's offspring walking out into the field, I love that image because that's really the future of the country we're looking at there. That's just, you know, if we If we don't have a successful agriculture, we're not going to have a country, period. And that image of the generations walking together out into the field was really touching stuff. So we're making a journey here from, we're going back to the past for the future, in that we're looking back to that Jeffersonian image of the small, independent farm being the foundation of our agriculture. That's a huge step, because our agriculture has become so industrialized over the years that it doesn't resemble that small farm anymore. But here's somebody who's making a change, and it's a huge change if he can pull it off. And it sounds like you are. How many farms do you have in your organization now?
We are currently partnered with 73 independent family farmers.
73. And when people buy your chickens, they can look at the four-digit code and they can meet the farmer who produced the chicken. They can call him up and say thank you, or call them up and chew them out, or whatever the case may be. But it's really, truly food with its farmer's face on it that we're working on here. And in doing so, we, Corwin and the folks at Farmer Focus, are providing farmers with a way to break free from the servitude in which they are contracted to industry. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. We will get right back and talk about just about how on earth we're going about freeing the farmers. Do stay tuned.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place while the USS Dale steamed through the Bering Sea, January 1943.
We took some terrible waves up there. One time a big groundswell rolled us over so far I thought we'd never make it back. I was on the lee deck when the ship went over into that roll. Luckily, I was able to grab onto a bulkhead handrail, and when the Dale went over, my feet left the deck. I hung there with nothing between my feet and the ocean but air. I was scared. She went over on her beam, paused for a minute, then she shuddered and shook because one of her propellers was out of the water and thrashing air. Slowly, very slowly, she rolled back toward the vertical, and my feet found the deck again. That wave scared the devil out of me.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Can farmers be freed from their servitude? That is the question on the table today. And with us today from the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia, Corwin Heatwall, founder and CEO of Farmer Focus. Now, when we say servitude, it really is servitude when you're in, under contract to the vertical integrators of agriculture. Are they not, Corwin? Is that an overstatement?
No, I think that that's accurate, because you have to farm by the rules and the playbook that the integrators provide you. And you were talking about how our model contrasts that. And we refer to as our model as it's the structure of the relationship of how we partner with our farmers. And it's really like going back in time 50 to 70 years ago, before vertical integration and the consolidation in the industry, when the farmers owned the birds on their farms and made all their decisions, were empowered to farm the right way. But yet we incorporate in modern technology and practices that allow us to produce, use this model and produce wonderful food in a natural environment, to where we're doing it efficiently and cost effectively.
Now, how does it differ? Yeah, how does it differ, Corwin, from the traditional agricultural co-op?
So we are, we do not operate like a traditional co-op, but nor like a traditional company, because we allow our growers to be invested in the process. And when they're invested in the process, it can inspire a special level of animal husbandry and attention to detail that really results in a higher quality product at little to no additional cost.
Now, do your do the customers for your birds recognize the difference between each, the way each one of your farmers raises chickens? Can they taste the difference?
Well, we like to think so, but our consumers have given us a lot of feedback that our chicken tastes like chicken and is delicious. So we believe that, that those levels of care that our farmers give the animals, and the purity of the organic feed and the natural environment, absolutely makes a big difference in the flavor.
Okay. Now, how do you differentiate? How do you work all of these birds together into one brand? That seems like a complicated thing to do.
It is very complicated, but that's where we, Farmer Focus, we own the processing facilities so that we can be the conduit between our farmers and consumers. So we bring all the wonderful birds to the processing facilities and then distribute them out to the retailers to make them available.
Okay. And in doing so, you're probably in the catbird seat to watch over the quality of the birds coming in, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And that's where the collaboration with the farmers is so important, to understand the detail, the challenges that are on farms. And we work together to make changes with the hatchery and the feed mills and the feed ration to ensure that all of our farms are enjoying the same quality.
Now, this would appear to be your model of taking back sovereignty, as it were, over the farm and the farm business, of taking back that ownership, would seem to be a threat to the vertical integrators, or am I wrong?
That's a great question. Obviously, our model is really simple. Everyone knows that ownership inspires care and higher levels of you know, attention to detail and things. But, you know, we are, it's like a David and Goliath story. We are such a little disruptor in such a massive industry. So we're the small guys, but, you know, I don't really feel that they would consider us a threat, although our growers are being very more and more vocal about the benefits of this model. So I'm sure it's putting a little pressure on some of the integrated companies.
Well, I would suspect they're looking over their shoulder and probably, you know, given your proximity to Washington, D.C., they're probably down there in the halls of USDA saying, hey, wait a minute, we have to do something about this. Have you ever got the sense that they're cooking up something to disrupt your model?
Well, that's interesting you mentioned that. Obviously, as we grow, more and more people are hearing about our model in contrast to the integrated model, and it has absolutely garnered interest from USDA and others. And I think that as we continue to shine a brighter and brighter light on the challenges of the integrated model, that they will feel additional pressure to adjust it to be more fair to the farmers.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that there are three businesses that own over 50% of the chickens in America. Did I hear that number right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And I would suspect that those companies are operating on very, very, very small margins.
Yes, some of them are publicly traded, others are not. But the ones that are publicly traded, where you can see their financials, they typically operate on a 1-3% margin. So, you know, that's where it is really about, you know, producing massive amounts of food at a very cheap cost, because sometimes profitability can come down to the tenth of a cent per pound.
Okay. Now, if somebody's making a tenth of a cent per pound raising chickens, then I would suspect a model in which, you know, the farmer is making a substantially more money. What did you say, 36 cents? 36% or something?
Yes, our farmers on average have a 36% higher net income from their farms than the industry average.
Mm-hmm. Well, now one wonders why every chicken farmer in the Shenandoah Valley and the Chesapeake Bay area isn't looking at what you're doing and thinking, how can I get in on this?
Yes, that is kind of the case, because we have over 125 unsolicited farmers that are on a waiting list that are pre-qualified to grow for us because of the interest in growing for a model that is non-vertically integrated.
Okay. So I would suggest that you pose a significant threat to those three companies that control half of the chickens in America. Because if farmers are making 36% more on their farms by not working with the integrators, and yet having many of the same benefits that the integrators provide, in which you provide food and processing facilities and branding and all of those things, I would suggest you're a significant threat.
Yeah, well, I would say
you might have to call out the cavalry to protect you.
So yeah, well, we have received some lightly threatening information that as they've felt the growers gravitate away from their companies and be on our waiting list and grow for us. So, but you know, I want to speak humbly toward it and not really say that we're proposing a significant threat. But I know that they are definitely keeping a very close eye on what we're doing.
No sense in kicking the bull in the butt, right?
That's right. You got to be careful.
Okay. Now, with respect to your farmers and building your brand, do you have them each chip in a little bit on marketing costs?
Well, that's where Farmer Focus covers all of the marketing costs and the distribution and all of that. So where the farmers chip in heavily is on where owning the assets on the farm, which is a tremendous help to the company because we share the risk of the live inventory and the significant amount of capital that that would take so the company can really focus on our processing, our marketing, and distribution networks and how we're telling the customers how we're different so that we can continue to expand and ultimately partner with more farmers, which is really just key to our mission to continue to support and expand and make more farms, you know, viable and sustainable for the next generation.
I would like to go back to that risk-reward equation that you just talked about. Now, if you are working, if you're under contract to an integrator, to one of the three big companies that own everything in the world, if you're under contract to them, who has the biggest share of the risk in raising the chickens?
The farmer is mostly mitigated against that risk because the company owns the assets on the farmer's farm. And you say, well, in our model, the farmer assumes that risk. But there's a lot of things that our farmers can do to mitigate that risk, and they even have insurances that they can put on the chickens and work with USDA and Virginia Department of Agriculture to have programs that bring indemnities against disease and other challenges that might come. But that is part of how we can afford to pay our farmers 36% more, because you can never afford to pay a farmer that much more if you're not getting something in return. So the shared risk along with the increased quality is what we get in return for paying our farmers 36% more.
And the farmers look at that and they say, well, I'll take the risk because I can manage risk, but I can't really manage risk if I don't own anything or I don't control anything. So giving farmers the responsibility kind of goes back to that Jeffersonian ideal of the of an agrarian society where the farmer has to be responsible. And if they're responsible, right?
Yeah, exactly. Our model is like going back in time to what Jefferson is referring to and, you know, empowering farmers to be their own owners and operators, everything, along with a company that has partnered with them with for best practices and, you know, to help manage the relationships and the resources that they need, which helps us be affordable in a highly consolidated and competitive market.
Yeah, so maybe it's almost the best of both worlds.
Well, we like to think so, and you know that's why the consumers are so excited about a farmer-focused brand that allows them the full transparency of meeting their farmer, along with you know the quality that it brings, and obviously by our waiting list of farmers, that it's wonderful for our farmers as well.
Why is there a waiting list? Why can't you bring them all in?
Well, two things. We need to expand our distribution network and our products to be offered in more retailers. And then we need to increase our processing capabilities to match with that demand. Okay. So they both have to both be managed appropriately. And, you know, we would love to turn the spigot on and just grow to that level, but that would be growing outside of our means. But one day we will be.
There you go. Now I have to ask you the most important question of all, Corwin. Your 16-year-old daughter, has she or has she not butchered a chicken?
She has butchered a chicken, and I cannot say that it was her favorite thing to do. she loves animals, and so her care for them does not involve butchering. But she is a fabulous farmer, though. I will have to give her that.
Thank you very much, Corwin. I really appreciate it. What a fun conversation. Corwin Heatwell, founder and CEO of Farmer Focus Organization. Can farmers be freed from their servitude? Heck yes. Thank you, Corwin.
Thank you, Michael. Great privilege to be on your show today.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.